All righty. Hello, friends. Welcome. Glad to have you all. There he is. Gosh, that Chris, that mustache just continues to make me celebrate every time I see it. Outstanding. Steve, greetings. Welcome back. How are you?
Guys. I'm good. I'm good.
Oh, good.
Chris, how are you?
I'm doing good. Good to meet you guys.
Likewise.
Dana, welcome. I see Joel's on the iPhone, and I see Davia's Fireflies AI has joined us, but I don't think Davia has yet. That's all right. Well, we've got a few people, newer people. They're going to join us later, probably 30 minutes in or so. And what I think I'll do is today, we're actually going to be talking about the Enneagram. So what I do is I'll orient a little bit of teaching, and then we'll open it up for coaching and conversations about anything that's on your mind, anything going on in your business. And then we can jump into that and we can talk about anything. It doesn't have to be the Enneagram, but I'm going to go a little deeper into that. And I think what I'll do, though, is just to start is I'll open it up to any follow-up coaching questions, anything you guys want to talk about before, so I can give it a little bit of time to let some other people jump in. And maybe I'll just ask a more pointed question of Steve, since we last talked. You were looking at kind of some of the vision values stuff, and just wanted to check in with you. How you're doing, Steve? What's the latest?
I would love to say I put in all the wonderful work that I intended on that side of things, and came up short, but still working on it. That document I sent you was our final version of that. We never, for a whole variety of different reasons, we never actually finished that off with Danielle from the lady from Luxton. So we do have that. It was never finally blessed by everybody. So we've used some of those guidelines on some of our marketing pieces, as far as, you know, we'll start certain PowerPoints with those as far as our guiding principles. I had intended to do a whole lot of additional soul searching and trying to really get my head back in the game. And I've done a little bit, felt kind of flat yesterday, but have not gone as far as I was hoping.
Okay. Well, that's right. That happens.
I did get through more module one, and unfortunately I left my notebook that I'm using for this program in my office.
No problem.
To dive into that more thoroughly.
No problem. Okay. So you're, I think the, one of the things we were working on with you in addition was kind of your own feeling of burnout, right? That was one of the issues. A little exercise that I want you to do is, and you don't have to do this live now on this call, but just make a note of this, and we can do it on live on the call if you want. But I just want to know, from your perspective, what contributes to joy at work for you, and what contributes to burnout, frustration, or boredom at work for you, or overwhelm, you know? So you might pick one or two of those things just to see sort of, this is a great way to map your own emotional system to see what it is that might be going on for you. So, you know, and if you want, you can talk about it right now. I mean, are you in a spot where you want to share a few words? I mean, I'm sure that would benefit everybody. We all have this, right? We all come to work, and we all have things that contribute and things that take away.
Yeah, happy to. As far as the joy, I am very blessed that I work with some really great people. And we actually just started last Monday bringing folks back into the office. So it's nice to have. I'm an introvert, and I never thought I'd want a whole bunch of people around me again. But we've got probably 8 people that are coming in now, which is a fraction of what it once was. But it helps having folks in. So that's bringing me some joy. Overall, it is kind of, I oversee a lot of different projects in a lot of different departments, and seeing those hit on expected deadlines is important. And I'm covering, as I mentioned before, I handle marketing, training development, IT, and now I'm getting back into sales and managing multiple AEs. It's a lot, especially on the IT side, where some of it is so detail oriented. And I'm also helping with compliance and process and procedure throughout the entire organization. And I can only get so, I'm trying to figure out how to maintain a certain level where I can oversee all these different departments, but still be able to dive deep into an IT issue where we've got to get down with, and if you've spent any time with IT people, they have a different way of speaking and their own terminologies and languages and ways of explaining things. And they make a lot of assumptions that you're right there with them. And you get done with the conversation, like, I don't have a freaking clue what you just said. And that's where a lot of my frustrations coming in. I'm still trying to be the jack of all trades. And thankfully, my boss is not smacking me around over it. But I hate those pointed questions in a meeting when he said, where do we stand on this and why is this not done? When I'm covering a whole hell of a lot of ground with not a lot of help.
Yeah.
That's where that frustration and burnout come from. I feel like I'm failing. I've been in this role a little over 2 years, and I'd give myself maybe a C minus on my performance, even though we've gotten a lot done.
Yeah, that would definitely take the wind out of my sails too, if I felt that was my performance level. So I appreciate you sharing that and some of your honesty, especially in this context. So thank you. Let me say a word about just a couple of things. One is, it's really, really important for you to get, if you haven't already, I know you have a good relationship with your boss, but it's really important for you to get alignment with your boss around exactly what winning looks like for you in this role. And the reason that's so important is because if you are sitting there saying, I'm giving myself a C minus in this role, hey, Davia, welcome. I want to make sure that that's actually true. Maybe that's true, or maybe you're really hard on yourself, like a lot of leaders I work with. And it's important because, remember, when we talk about everything we do in this program is we are aware of the emotional system and how it's driving decision-making and behavior. And your own personal emotional system is an important part of that. And so, you know, an analogy that comes to my mind is when I first learned, started selling knives, I sold Cutco years ago when I was in high school. And I remembered I had to get on a phone and call people, all these referrals that I had. And, you know, I'd call like five people and they'd say no. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I don't know what's wrong with me. I can't seem to get this right. I remember going to, you know, get trained or whatever. And they were like, so here's the deal. You need to get 30 no's before you're going to get a yes. So every time you get a no, I want you to mark it down and celebrate that no, because that's one step closer to a yes. And I was like, oh, I had no idea that winning was like 30 no's, not five no's. And now I'm feeling more motivated. And so I'm checking it off. And of course, you never get to 30. You only get to maybe 6 to 8, 10 at the most. And then you're getting yeses. And so you're always feeling like you're ahead of the game. So the exact same job with a completely different frame suddenly boosted my emotional system. And so as you think about your own burnout, I want you to think about what does it mean for you to play with shifting frames? And you may need your boss to help you shift the frame. You know, the CEO may need to come and say, hey, no, man, you're killing it. And on these areas, this is what you're doing amazing on. And here's what we expect. And here's what winning looks like in these other areas. So I think it's worth you just playing with frames. And again, I can give you some, but I actually think it's more powerful and potent when your CEO gives you those frames. And when you get clarity on, hey, I want to do a good job, I'm feeling my, and you want to confess to them a little bit, like, hey, I'm starting to notice I'm hitting a wall kind of emotionally. I'm not as motivated as I was. I'm glad I'm here. I love the people I work with and I want to leave, but I'm not where I need to be in terms of my own enjoyment. And one of the things that will help me is just to understand more clearly what winning looks like. And from your perspective, how I'm doing it against that. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with what he has to say about you. So that's my guess. Does that make sense?
It does. It does.
Good. That's true for all of you on this call, by the way. If you're noticing that you're frustrated or bored or whatever, give me just 1 second. My dog is, look, come here. Down. Good boy. All right. Anytime you're feeling that burnout, start asking yourself, what frame am I looking through? What belief do I have about this work? And begin to play with the frame and you might notice something shift. So great, great question, Steve. Glad you brought it out. Okay, for those of you who are newer on the call, down, stay. We're gonna do the Enneagram today. So I'm gonna start doing a little bit of training, but I'm gonna take one more question and then we'll jump into that. So does anybody else have anything they wanna say? Anybody wanna introduce yourself? We've got a couple new players, Chris, Dana, Joel, it looks like. Anybody want to talk just briefly about what your context is so others know who's in the room?
I'll just say hi. I'm Dana. Nice. I'm really happy to be here. Not entirely sure what to expect, but really good to see everyone and meet everyone.
Dana, what's your role? What do you do?
I'm a chiropractor. I run my office, private practice. Small business. And I also sit on a couple of, boards. So I'm kind of excited to dip my toe and see how I've been used to for a long time running a healthcare practice, but how can leadership translate over into those board chair positions?
Awesome. Great. Well, glad to have you. Thanks for coming along for the journey. Chris, tell us who you are, what you do.
My name is Chris Rusin. I, for a living, I serve as a lead pastor at a church and about maybe like, 300 people on a Sunday, but probably about more like 600 people in the organization as a whole. And then on my team, we've got about 6 people that work with me. And I love the subject of leadership. I love it. I love to be, just love to learn more about it. I pursued that interest in my graduate program, that degree. I love the Enneagram. I love all that stuff. And I just love learning more about it and how people work, how they connect, and just learning more about myself. And I'm excited about this.
Great. So glad to have you. Joel, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. My name is Joel Eshelman. I own, I'm a fitness entrepreneur. I'm here to learn. I was in a mastermind with Shane. I had some great conversations with him, especially in our last meeting. And I, in a very crowded group text thread, I happened to catch that he was doing this training and messaged him and got connected to this. And I'm just, like I said, I'm here to be a sponge and learn from him and from everybody else. And leadership is something I do every day, but I always want to get better at it. And the Enneagram is something that I've always been very interested in and have actually a lot of access to, but I haven't taken action on that access. And so I feel like this is a great way for me to learn some things from somebody I respect. And then obviously wherever Dana goes, I try to be. So glad that she's here and just excited to learn from everybody and meet some new people.
Awesome. Thanks, Jill. Appreciate it. Okay. Does anybody else have any questions? Anything that they want to talk about before we get into the actual training? Anything going on in your team and your organization? All right. Sounds like we're good to go. Okay. So, what I'm going to do is I'm dropping a link in the chat. I hope it's the right link. Let me just confirm that's the right link. Yes, it is. Okay, this is one of the better Enneagram typing websites. So, if you don't know your type, this is a good site to use to get that information. I know some of you have already done it, maybe, but it's a great place to start. I was trained more in the modality of the Enneagram that you are better. It's better for you to find your type through dialogue and reflection than it is with a test. The link is not working. Anybody else having that problem?
I think it worked for me. I just got to double check.
Chris, works for you?
Good.
Davey, I think we're all getting the link to work. It seems personal. It may be about you personally. It has some issues with you. I think we need to have a hard conversation with that link. is it working now? Okay, good. Is that a thumbs up or no? Still not working? All right. Well, in any case, I'm going to share my screen in a minute. We're going to run through the whole system. Let me give you just a little bit of orientation about how to think about this and why we talk about it in this program. So number one is, in one of the earlier trainings somewhere in module one, I talk about what at the heart of all great leadership is ultimately self-awareness. It is the thing that differentiates truly phenomenal leaders from really average ones. And self-awareness is this endless journey where we're constantly mining our own inner life for both blind spots and gifts, things we're good at that we don't even know we're good at, blind spots we don't know that we have. The more that we understand these things, we can then have a choice. So the more aware we become, we then have a choice. We go from our inner life to our public life. And the choice we have to make is, how much of my inner life should I reveal in each context? And sometimes revealing more is actually really, really useful. And other times revealing more is not very useful. And so but unless you know it's there, you can't even make that choice. So I found working with tons of different personality typologies and profiles and systems that the Enneagram is by far my favorite. And I'll explain why that is. There are other great ones, and I don't have anything against them. They all belong. There's not sort of a competition in my mind. They're doing slightly different things in different ways. And I'll help you understand why I think the Enneagram is so different and special from everything else. And so the first thing to know is there are three basic traditions of personality typology, and that is the empirical tradition, the esoteric tradition, and the wisdom tradition. So the empirical tradition is everything that's late 19th century, research-based, mostly born of Freud and Jung and all kinds of research. So you've got StrengthsFinder, Disc Indra, Berkman, the list goes on and on. People usually get exposed to that a lot in the corporate world. Almost everything about the Big Five is another one. Everything about those is based on preferences and behaviors. I like this, I don't like that, I behave this way, I don't behave that way. And so preferences and behaviors are typically how we tend to triangulate a personality cluster. So that's the empirical tradition. Then you have the esoteric tradition. Esoteric is a word that really means interior, and it's usually more mystical in nature. So things like astrology and numerology would be some of the most well-known expressions of that kind of typology. So the day you're born has some impact, and where you were born and what was happening to the planets. There's a whole body of knowledge and a system of belief over thousands of years that teaches this. And that you will find almost never in the corporate world. It's extremely rare. And then the last tradition is called the wisdom tradition. And the wisdom tradition, there are a few different bodies that do this, but the Enneagram is the main one. And the reason it's called the wisdom tradition is that it came out of a group of wisdom teachers for thousands of years who were wandering itinerant teachers, and their view of things began to influence others. And it became increasingly known only through oral tradition for a long time. It was secret knowledge through oral tradition. And eventually in the late 60s, it started being taught more publicly. Its origin is not actually a human typology. It's not trying to type different people in different buckets originally. Its origin is actually a human transformation tool. That's what it was originally designed for. And it later became, people became aware that actually these things reflect types of people, actually, that we each have some of these. And so there were two bodies of people that were influenced by this. One were the Sufi Muslims, and the other were the Desert Fathers. These were monks that lived in the first through third century in the Middle East, and they were meditating and reflecting on these teachings. And so there's a kind of a spiritual connection to things as well. You don't have to be spiritual to care about this. But it's present in the writings. And so you can go as deep as you want. And if you just want to use it at a fairly surface level, it works really effectively. If you want to go deeper, you can. But here's the underlying premise of the Enneagram, which is sort of fun. And again, as long as you don't believe anything I'm saying and it doesn't become a kind of dogma, then it can be really useful. So hold these things lightly, try it on like a coat. If you don't like it, take it off. But here's the core teaching. The core teaching is that all of us, when we came into the world, we left the divine or God or wholeness or oneness. We left this thing through one of nine different doors, and that was nine different personalities. And we left through a door that was ultimately a kind of deception, a fundamental lie, a fundamental thing we forgot that we didn't know we forgot. And the only way back to wholeness or oneness is through the same door you came from. And so this is the underlying belief that you are born a type and you stay a type your whole life. And it's not that you bounce around to different types. There's that one type. And until or unless you deal with that underlying issue, you will stay stuck in patterns and habits of behavior. And so the Enneagram ultimately does something different than other tools in that it is not fundamentally about preferences and behaviors. It's actually about underlying emotions and underlying fears and underlying desires. So that's what the Enneagram can do. So tell a very quick story of my own experience coming to the Enneagram. I was a hospital chaplain at UCLA Medical Center, and I was in seminary at the time. I was getting a master's of divinity, and I was very, very stressed. I could feel I had left a career in advertising and marketing, and I was going to seminary. I didn't really know why. I didn't want to be a pastor. I didn't know what I was doing. And I was feeling really lost and not clear on where I was supposed to go with my life. And, you know, this training, the hospital chaplaincy training, they introduced the Enneagram. And as I'm listening to the person talk about it, and I was a psychology major and I'd already studied all these other personality things, and I'd never seen anything quite like this. And so what happened was I was totally enamored by it, but all, totally confused at the same time, because when they described each of the types, I was like, I see myself in that, and I'm definitely part of that, and I feel myself there, and that one I'm not really, but like, there's like six different types of the nine that I feel like I could easily be. And they had the philosophy, the narrative tradition, which was you don't get to take a test, which I'm letting you do, but they wouldn't let you take a test, so you had to wrestle through, what type are you, what type are you? And I was going on and on and on and on, and I finally was reading this one book about the Enneagram, and it was describing the type three. And the three, it says in the book, it said, type threes will have the hardest time knowing who they are, knowing what they should do in their life. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's kind of me. And then it said, the best thing for a type three to do is to learn to meditate. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't stand meditating. That's the most boring, awful, terrible thing I've ever thought of. And then it said, threes will hate this idea. I'm like, huh? Well, that's definitely me. And I go, but you know what? I need to get through this. I'm going to learn how to master meditation. I'm going to find a teacher. I'm going to do a protocol. I'm going to get into this. Very next sentence. Threes will take this on like a project to be conquered. I was like, what? Are they reading my journal? What is going on? And so I was just completely shocked at how accurate everything was in ways that I didn't know I could be read or understood. So I was just totally shocked by all of it. So anyway, that launched me on this journey last 15, almost 20 years now. I've been working with this. I apprenticed under a woman for a year who's an Enneagram master. And so that's how I came to what I know, and been using it extensively with senior executive teams and in the church and outside for decades. So that is the big picture. Now let me share my screen and let's get into it. So Oh, I was about to pause recording. That's not what I want to do. I think the way this works is when it's Keynote, I have to share the entire desktop. And everybody, could you just give me 1 second? I'm going to put my dog out so that he doesn't keep distracting us.
Or distracting me.
Righty. Okay. Can everybody see my screen? Okay. When I advance, does it disappear? The words, do they disappear? And now you see a head.
Good.
Show reality with the head.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
Yes.
All right. Perfect. So, hold on a second. Something went wrong here. I don't know what's going on. All right, let's try that again. Here we go. All right. So a big part of what I do when I'm coaching people or working with leaders is I'm helping them get in touch with other realities. It sounds like a weird way to say this, but I'm going to try to describe it differently. So the reality is that we have trillions of bits of data per second that are coming at us at all times. And the human brain can process on average about 60 bits of data per second. So there's this incredibly vast discrepancy between what's coming in and what we can actually process. Now, if you add to that, our human senses then further reduce that so that the human eye can only detect the equivalent of one octave on a piano of the entire spectrum of light. So there's an incredible limitation in what we can actually take in. So in order to manage that discrepancy, we effectively use lenses or perceptual filters. And there are the three most common. One is we just block things. You know, when you think about sunglasses, they block certain frequencies of light. And so only a few things will get in. So right now, your left pinky toe is sensing something. It's actually having an experience of some kind. You're not paying attention to it until or unless I just told you that that is happening. Does that make sense to everybody? So that is blocking. Then you have, what'll happen here. I'll use an example. Can everybody see the couple standing on the beach there, looking out over on the shore there? Everybody got yep. That? Good. And can you also see the baby?
I can see it.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anybody not see the baby?
I don't see the baby.
All right, good. So pay attention to the white space. Can you see it now?
Now I see the baby.
Okay, great. Okay. So this is one of these classic things where when we block information, this is at the heart of what we're doing is we are selecting the figure from the ground based upon our needs. So for example, in a picture like this, the figure is the tree and the couple standing on the beach there. And the ground is what's behind that. But you can also reverse it and turn what you see there into the figure, and then the tree and everything is the ground. And so now you have two different realities at the same time. Now, if you are a retired couple, perhaps, and you are, you know, looking forward to your retirement, let's say, you're probably going to see the couple standing on the beach. If you're a young expectant mother, maybe the first thing you'll see is actually the baby, not anything else, right? So it's based a lot on, I've got a little something here. Okay, hold on. Hang on a minute. My thing, I need to go to my preferences, show the pointer. There we go. That's what I need. Oh, I gotta admit a few people too. All right. So let's get back to this. So we select the figure from the ground based upon our needs. That determines the reality that we are all living with. And let me close that. So that's one of the filters we use. The next one is we bend. We take things and we distort them a little bit. That's actually what a lens does. It bends light, especially a prescription lens, right? So we block, we bend. Bending is like, here's a guy with a pink shirt hugging his girlfriend who's reading a paper, which is really interesting because that girl has some very hairy arms and that man has very slight body frame. And so what you have is this really interesting optical illusion where you can bend what you're seeing and you go, oh, actually, so it's the guy in the chair and the woman's, okay, now I'm seeing it, right? So that's kind of how that that works. So here's another one. Woman hovering on a beach. It's actually not hovering. It's just a shadow of a flag. So you have these fun little optical illusions. So that's bending. And the last thing we do is we blend. We take similar things and we call them the same. It's just a way of managing the chaos of so much information that comes at us at all times. And so this is where racism comes from. But it's also not just racism. It's also where the expert mind comes from. So the expert comes to the world and says, I've been here, I've done that, I've seen this a bunch of times. And then they apply the same thinking to a situation that seems similar, but in reality, you can never step in the same river twice. So there is no such thing as you've seen this before. You've never, ever seen this before. But the human mind has to make a place for it to live that goes, oh yeah, I've done that before. And the advantage to that is it creates some efficiency. The disadvantage of that is you may inadvertently bend it to an outcome that may or may not be the one you want. So there you go. Those are kind of the big things, blocking, bending, and blending. And this is all called selective compression. Selective compression refers to what people who make scale models do. So if you take a plane and you shrink it down to 1/100th the size, and you have to make choices about which things you're going to leave out, which details you're going to remove, because at that scale, you can't include all of the letters on each button in the cockpit. And you may not even be able to have all the cockpit buttons. And so you remove all kinds of things. And what you're left with is a collection of views of the world, which we call perception. And then what we do is we take that perception, this sort of bent, blocked, and blended picture of the world, and we project it out into the universe, out into the world that we walk around in. And this becomes, we call that reality. That's what we see as real. But the fact of the matter is, all people come with different configurations of selective compression. They blocked, bent, and blended different things in a different way, and then they begin to project out as well. So perception is actually just projection. They come together and it works great as long as you don't interact with anybody else. And then suddenly you interact with somebody else and you either have conflict or you have creativity. You have expansion because they begin to expand your view of what it is you're seeing. So is this making sense to everybody? Okay, great. And let me just make sure, is everybody else on? Oh yeah, we've got some other people who've joined. Hey, Peter. Hey, Lindsay, welcome. Glad to have you. Okay, so now that brings us to the Enneagram. Why did I just talk through all of this stuff before we got to the Enneagram? The reason is because the Enneagram is a shortcut to your unique form of selective compression. So remember when we started, we said self-awareness is the most powerful thing you can give yourself as a leader. The more self-aware you are, the better. Well, what better thing than to know your unique form of selective compression, what you tend to focus on, what you tend to suppress, what you tend to ignore, what you tend to blend? That's really powerful to understand. And so the Enneagram is a tool that gives us a shortcut quickly to see what those are. And so now what I'm going to do is walk you through some of the types and some of the underlying dynamics that make the Enneagram so powerful. Ennea just means 9 in the Greek language. Gramos means points. It's just a 9-pointed shape. That's where the name comes from. The goal of the Enneagram is transformation. It's not just to lock you in a little box and say that's your number and you should be happy with it. It's actually about transformation. And at the heart of the Enneagram is a teaching that says there are two things that we are given when we are born. One is a gift, and the other is something we must earn or learn. And so the Enneagram will talk about your essence, the thing that is your unique, powerful gift that was given that you're really, really good at. That's like the diamond. And then you have your personality. They use that word to describe the coal, actually. So when we say personality, that's my personality. We're really talking about the distorted habits and patterns of behavior that aren't actually helping us get more of what we want. And so we spend our life trying to transform that personality or that coal into a second diamond at the center of our being. And so our greatest weakness becomes our greatest strength. And that is at the heart of this thing. So you have twin diamonds at the center of your being as you do this work over time. Okay, so let's make one other quick distinction, then we'll jump into the types. High and low functioning. So people will often ask me, most common question I get is, hey, what Enneagram type should we hire? What Enneagram type should I date or marry? If I'm this type, what's the best type to be with? And my answer is always, whatever type has the most number of high functioning moments is the best type. So we all have low and high functioning moments. High functioning moments happen when we're open, balanced, stable, able to handle stress and obstacles with ease, and able to get more of what we want. And I hope that all of us have more high functioning moments in life than low functioning. Low functioning moments happen when we're closed, reactive, troubled, emotionally stuck, unable to handle stress and obstacles, and not able to get what we want. So there are people on the Enneagram that are pathologically sick and have mostly low functioning moments throughout their life. And so that is a particular type that you don't want to have in your marriage or in your business if you can help it. And then there are types that are very high functioning. And when they're at their absolute best, you'll see that they have great capacity to bring unique gifts to your organization or to your life. All right, with that, the next thing I want you to do is to think in threes. The Enneagram is all about three sets of threes. First is three centers of intelligence. They teach that we have three ways that we apprehend information and knowledge about the world. And number one way is the head. We apprehend information through rationality and knowledge. Number two is the heart. We apprehend information through emotion, feelings. Now, the human heart has an electromagnetic field that is 5,000 times greater than the electromagnetic field of the brain. And the human heart has up to and around 40,000 neural dendrites in it, actual brain cells in the walls of the heart. So this is a real center of intelligence, not a metaphor. And then the body, or sometimes it's called the gut in Enneagram literature, kind of that instinctual part of us. But if you think about it as the body as a whole, the body is comprised of trillions of very intelligent cells that are doing all kinds of things on your behalf without your awareness, permission, knowledge. Even if you wanted to guide your body to do it, you would have no idea how to guide it in its own way. So the body holds a tremendous amount of information, wisdom, and guidance. And so all humans have all three centers, but one center is our dominant center of intelligence. And when I say your dominant center of intelligence, I do not mean your best. We mean the center of intelligence around which you have the most distortion. So whatever your dominant center of intelligence is, it is the area that you struggle with the most. Even if you don't know you struggle with it, it's the center of intelligence you have a difficult relationship to. So in the simple terms, you have types 8, 9, and 1. These are body types. That's the center around which they have the most distortion. 2, 3, and 4, heart types. 5, 6, and 7, head types. And I won't get into great details now. This is a deeper training, and it is available on in the modules and the bonus. But I'll just make a high point here. Each type relates uniquely to that center of intelligence. That's how you get the three distinct types. So you know what, you might wonder, like, well, if 8s and 1s are both body types, why are they different? Well, it's because they relate to that center in a different way. 8s have a tendency to express their instinct, their will, their want. They just go. They go move. They hard, fast, express. 9s tend to deny. They really don't pay attention to their will, their desire, their instinct. They kind of hover above it, searching for other things. And then 1s have a tendency to just repress it. There's a right way and a wrong way to do something, and I need to do it the right way. And so I'm going to just lock this thing down. Whatever those instincts are that are driving me. I need to make sure they're appropriate and kept under wraps. And there's a lot of energy spent there, right? So you can feel qualitatively the difference between these types, and all of these have that that go on. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about some of the names, some of the needs, and then I'll spend more time on what I call the spirit animal portion of the Enneagram. But I just want, we're just going to go around really quickly to get the color, the texture, the feeling of each type. I don't usually like the names. The names are actually, you'll find different names in different places. The reason I don't like names is people hear the word and they go, well, that's not really me, and I'm more that, and that's not what it means. So one perfectionist, it's also called idealist somewhere else. It's also called reformer somewhere else. And these are confusing names. And so I much prefer just the numbers. So just so you know, typical names just for references: perfectionist, 2 is a helper, 3 is an achiever, 4 is an artist, 5 observer, 6 loyalist, 7 enthusiast, 8 challenger, 9 is a mediator. Now let's go a little deeper and talk about what are their underlying needs. And now this is really, really important, right? Because at the beginning I said, we select the figure from the ground. We select our reality based upon our needs, the thing we care about and look for. So you could imagine that if I have a fundamentally different need, if I have a need to be liked versus a need for power, I'm going to view the world very differently. I'm going to view situations very differently, and I'm going to make very different decisions. So the one has a need to be perfect, to do it the right way. That is a primary influence and driver. The two has a need to be needed. They want to be helpful. They want others to rely on them. The three has a need to be successful. The four has a need to be unique, unlike anybody else. The five has a need to perceive, to understand, to see. The six has a need for security. The seven has a fundamental need to avoid pain. The eight has a need to be against. They tend to want to challenge. And the nine has a need to avoid conflict. Let's talk about the self-image. Self-image is also really important because it talks about your goal state. It's what am I when I'm at my best? When I've done it well, what does that look like? Well, this is my self-image if I'm a one. I'm right. I did it right. It doesn't have to be like I got to argue to be right. It just means that I did the thing that I think is right. I'm right. Two, I was helpful. I added some sort of support to somebody. Three, I was successful. Four, I'm unique. I'm special. Five, I can see through things. I can penetrate beneath the layers of things. Six, I do my duty. Seven, I'm happy. That's when I'm at my best. Eight, I demonstrate my strength. Nine, I have found contentment. So as I'm going around these, I want you to be thinking about which parts of these resonate with you, which parts don't resonate with you. Maybe your spouse, maybe someone you work with, maybe a friend, you start to feel this qualitatively. Now, I talked about the twin diamonds at the center of their being, right? So when an Enneagram type becomes really healthy, one part of them was always there and will always be there until they're gone. And another part reverses. Their greatest weakness becomes their greatest strength. So that's what I want to show you now, are kind of the two operating words for each type that show you them at their best with twin diamonds. Ones are always principled, but they tend to be very critical, both of themselves and others. When they become integrated and whole, they become one of the most accepting types on the Enneagram. It becomes one of their superpowers, even though initially it starts as a weakness. Twos are always caring, incredibly generous and giving to others, but they tend to have very bad boundaries. They are irresponsible in managing their caregiving. And what they become is highly boundaried and highly self-responsible. Threes are always adaptable. They're really natural. You're able to change and adjust however we need to, but they are often dishonest. They're dishonest with themselves and deceitful with others as a result. And so they become highly authentic. Fours are creative, but they tend to be more depressive. They tend to be forlorn in sad emotions, dealing with those things. They become deeply content. Fives are highly perceptive. They can see through. They understand all kinds of things. They're very, very visionary, but they tend to be very low energy and very kind of withdrawn types. fives at their best activate a tremendous amount of energy. And so that wisdom and insight becomes translated into meaningful action in the world. Sixes are always loyal, but tend to be phobic. They're very anxious types. They live with a great deal of fear, but they become deeply courageous. Sevens are always joyful, but they tend to whistle past gravestones. They tend to kind of pretend things aren't there. They live in a little bit of denial. They bounce. So a really healthy seven becomes highly realistic. They, instead of walking past gravestones, they bring their unique light to the darkness. Eights are always protective. When they're at a lower functioning, they tend to want to protect themselves. When they're at a higher function, they tend to be really generous and quite protective of others. Nines are peacemakers by nature, will always bring harmony wherever they go, but they will usually lose sight of themselves and their own goals in the process. So a really healthy nine has not lost the ability to make peace and is able to bring their own goal orientation to the equation. So comments or questions about any of this before I go any further? How's everybody doing? Everybody still with me? I know these trainings on the Enneagram are not just the Enneagram, but online can be difficult.
It's kind of interesting knowing that I've already done mine and I know what I am. Some of this rings true. A lot of it rings true.
Good.
Fascinating, Shane. I'm loving this.
Good. Thanks for joining us, Peter. Okay. So now what I'm going to do is my favorite part, which is, which I call the, I actually did this in San Francisco once and I said, oh, we're going to do a spirit offended. So if any of you are in kind of the West Coast, San Francisco area, that was probably offensive. I was told it was offensive because Native Americans would find that offensive. Nonetheless, it's meant to be sort of a playful tongue-in-cheek. So it's just a metaphor. So here are the spirit animals for the Enneagram types. Now, I want you to think less in terms of literal things. And if you find any of these offensive, that's okay. It's meant to be kind of funny and playful. And I'm going to be less, I'm going to create caricatures of the Enneagram types. I'm doing that on purpose. So if you are one of these types and you feel that I haven't accurately captured you, I'm doing that on purpose. It's meant to create clarity. The more vaudevillian I can dial this up, the more clear these distinctions become. And then I'll come back and show you how some of that softens. The second thing I'm going to say about these metaphors is that these are fundamentally energetics more than they are behaviors. So an example is that the Enneagrams come energetic thumbprint, and you will feel it in a very pronounced way with certain types. Eights come into a room and they displace a lot of water. Anybody that just fills a room larger than life, that's their energy you're picking up on. Have you ever met somebody who's kind of anxious and vibrating and you can feel their anxiety, right? That's their energetic thumbprint. Super laid back and chill. That is their energy. So that's what we're going to be talking about. All right. So number one, let's talk about the ones. They are the ant on the Enneagram. Ants are incredibly industrious. They can carry 10 times their weight. They're really, really hardworking creatures. And so if a one ever comes to you and says, you know what, I'm feeling really overwhelmed and overworked, you should take that really seriously. If a seven comes and does that, you should say, that's adorable. We'll get to them in a minute. But the one, that's the one, right? And so you can imagine ants on vacation. What is a vacation like for an ant? Oh, they just sit there and they're going to plot and plan and figure out everything that's going to happen. 9:30, I'm going to be reading my book and I'm going to get my pina colada and I'm going to drink only this much because I got to make sure I don't over drink that. And then I'm going to make sure, super fun. I mean, it's so relaxing. It's so fun to be with ones on a vacation. Chris, I see you're laughing. Thank you for that because Chris is a one. Okay. They're also, to counterbalance that energy of the ant, they're also a bee, industrious, hardworking, really intense creatures. So they build these incredible structures, honeycomb structures, one of the most stable things. So ones are naturally great at building systems, processes, physical and otherwise. They're just really natural. You find a lot of engineers are ones. And if they're not a one, they'll start activating one-like energy to be an engineer. The other thing that the bee brings is they have a little stinger. This is not life-threatening usually unless you're allergic, but there's a stinger, and the stinger is they're quite critical. Now, if you ever feel criticized by a one, you will feel it and they'll be like, I'm merely just being honest. I'm just trying to tell you what I'm seeing and that isn't the okay way and there's a better way and that way is not right. And they get to be kind of a train on rails. Like they're not going to be moved off their viewpoint. They have their viewpoint and they go. The stinger then, it's like they're so hard on themselves that they don't even notice how it might hurt somebody else. So it's just a little bit of a sting. And ones are not like eights. Eights are judgmental. Ones are critical. Two big differences. A criticism is you did it the wrong way. A judgment is you're an idiot, right? So one won't usually do the judgment. That would be wrong. They're very concerned about right and wrong. They'll do the criticism, not the judgment. So everybody good with ones? Makes sense? Comments or questions? Anybody know ones? Chris, anything I had said here that was deeply offensive? Hopefully.
Dude is so good. Love it, man. So good.
Good. Okay. Number two. Two is the donkey. This is the beast of burden. You could load the donkey up with the whole weight of the world and they will thank you and ask for more. If a two comes to you and says, I'm feeling really overworked, the worst thing you could do to a two, the most heartbreaking thing you could do to a two would be to say to them, I am so sorry. I had no idea what a hard load you were carrying. I'm going to give half your work to Jim. They will be devastated. The best thing you can do for a two is you say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I can't believe what we've been putting you through. Thank you so much for everything you're carrying. And they will say, and what else can I carry for you? The twos need to find ingratiating ways to get thanked because twos live with the belief that they don't actually have needs. It's everybody else who has needs. And the two is here to meet those needs of everybody else. The two doesn't realize what they're actually doing is they are setting up a covert contract. Here's what a covert contract says. It goes like this. I have human needs, but because I'm not like the rest of you, I don't like to admit those human needs and I don't like to look at them. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to go about meeting your needs. I'm going to pay attention to your needs. I'm going to meet them all the time. And then because I've been meeting your needs, you're going to go turn around, look at me and my needs, and I don't have to ask for it. You're just going to know to meet my needs. So you know, too, when you have like a perfect glass of water sitting right in front of you and you're like, how did this happen? I'm so thirsty. I didn't even know I was thirsty. They will sense your need before you do. They'll have an incredible birthday celebration for you. They'll know exactly which thing they love that you love, right? So that's the donkey. They're also the cat, though. So if you violate the covert contract and maybe you're not thinking about their needs as much as they're thinking about your needs, they go from very furry and cuddly and purry to like suddenly just vanish. They're kind of like, they might scratch you on the way out. And they're kind of like, what? It's no big deal. It's fine. I don't care. I'm fine. Everything's fine. So then they kind of get a little bit like cold and aloof and distant because they feel that you violated a contract that you didn't know you had signed. So that's the two. Anybody offended by what I just said? Anybody a two here? Anybody know a two? Comments or questions about any of these types that I'm playing out? Is anybody?
This is fascinating. And you're describing so many of my family members. And like it's like literally light bulb, like this, the last 5 minutes in particular, this is bombshell stuff.
Good. Hopefully some things will go off as we go around. You should at least know somebody on every type, not every type, but most of the time you'll know somebody somewhere in your life.
I was going to say, as we go around, I'm sure we're all going to go, oh, so-and-so's a one, so-and-so's a two.
Yes.
Put faces.
Yes, exactly. One of the rules of the Enneagram is you're never supposed to type anybody else. And so we are going to violate that constantly by typing everybody we know. I'll clarify what I mean by that at the end. So the number three is the chameleon. This is that person who can change their colors without even knowing they're changing their colors. So a really great three, if they're a three, they will adopt the ideal form of whatever group they respect the most and want respect from. Threes ultimately want to be liked. So they're constantly monitoring social cues to figure out how to be well-liked. So if they want to be on Wall Street, they're going to have the right watch and they're going to have the right shoes and the right suit. And they're going to know how to get there early and leave late and all that stuff. Now, that doesn't mean that all threes are hard charging workaholics because some threes might want to be hippies, in which case they're going to have like the best hemp pants and they're going to be like perfect dreadlocks and they're going to be like super anti-corporate hegemony. And they're going to have that story going on. And what's amazing about a three is that same hippie could just decide one day to maybe become a corporate executive somewhere. And all of a sudden they transform and nobody even knows how they did it. And they don't even see the difference. So, you know, the kind of the three is the experience of, hey, we were just in a green room and you were green. And then we moved to a blue room and you turned blue. What's going on? Which one are you? Are you blue or are you green? And the three will be like, what are you talking about? I didn't change colors. And what's the difference between green and blue anyway? I mean, I don't know why we're talking about this. Can we get back to just being awesome blue? So that's the three. They're also really good. Some, not all, but some threes, they got a little peacocking tendency. They like to name drop. They like to humble brag. They like to get recognition and awards. And they don't even know that they like doing that, but they do usually. And so, you know, it's the threes kind of like, yeah, I was hanging out the other day. My book here, the best-selling number one book. Yes, I meant to put that on my bookshelf. I didn't mean for you to see that. And oh, this award. No, I was actually going to put that on a drawer. I'm embarrassed by that award. I mean, the other night when I was hanging out with Bono, we were... right? So they casually drop in. There's a lot of that kind of energy that goes on with the three. So there you go. That's the three. Four, the Basset Hound. This is this forlorn looking creature. There's a lot of sadness. There's a lot of melancholy. Fours have a way of kind of being artists and they connect to the interior world, whether it's visual or poetic or whatever. And they need to kind of connect to this. And so they have this really interesting dynamic, which is like, nobody understands me. That's kind of nobody understands what I'm actually going through. And not only do you not understand me, if you said you understood me, and maybe even if you thought you did, that would be kind of offensive because I'm totally unique and you could never understand me even if you tried. And so that's the Basset Hound. That's that four quality of kind of forlorn. But they're also that oyster, that shell that can create using that irritant of a grain of sand that then suddenly creates some form of beauty in lots of different ways. And so they tend to have lots of beauty. You'll know you're dealing with a four when they're almost the anti-three. So I remember we were, there was a developer, we were a real estate development company I was serving. And there was one guy who was a developer who was a four. And real estate developers have a certain way of being. They wear really expensive suits, $30,000 watches. They have a certain way they show up in the world. And this guy would show up with like an alligator t-shirt and like shorts and flip-flops. And he just kind of would sit back and be quiet the whole time and kind of moody. And he just really wanted to be different from everybody. That's how they know they're going to be loved, is that they're different and special. The five, my dad was a five, love the fives. Chipmunks, they're the creature that packs their cheeks full of the nuts, store up for winter. They're incredibly voracious for new knowledge, ideas, information, strategies, understandings. This is a powerful creature. They are also very, very stingy emotionally. They're less likely to give away a whole lot of energy, time, and emotion to somebody. They tend to be really generous with their knowledge. That's the other thing they have. They're like the owl. They have the ability to see 360 degrees at night. You know, those lantern eyes that can detect everything. And if you have a five somewhere in your life or in your organization, they're likely to talk last in a meeting. They're likely to have the most useful thing to say when they talk last. You kind of wish they would have just said it at the beginning, but they couldn't have said it at the beginning because they were constantly taking in information before they could actually move to any kind of decision. The five is notorious for being a ready, aim, and then aim, 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 and then go ahead and aim, fire, or not fire, just aim again, and then go back to aim again. So that's sort of the five. They have a struggle with moving to action because they're constantly gathering more and more information, more and more data. Okay, hopefully that was sufficiently offensive for you, Steve. Steve's a five, not to out him. Six is the rabbit. This is that creature that's constantly scanning for threats and trying to detect what might be going on, what terrible thing might be lurking around the corner. Sixes are always worst case scenario planning. You'll know you're a six, not because you think about a worst case scenario plan happening, but because you emotionally live it as if it's already happening. The feeling of a six, most sixes will say, if you want to know what it's like to be a six, imagine yourself flying down the highway with no brakes and then get blindfolded. That's the feeling of being a six. It's like something terrible is about to unfold and happen. It's going to be bad. And we need to prepare for this terrible, catastrophic thing that's coming our way any minute. So there's a tremendous amount of negativity. They're always pouring cold water on new ideas. And then they're also the wolf. Wolf pack. They're a pack animal. That's where you get safety, safety in numbers. You're going to be part of the pack. You got to be part of the pack. And then they have this really ambivalent relationship to authority. So they want the authority figure. They care about it. They're like, we need an alpha. Who's the alpha? That's the alpha. But I can do a better job than the alpha, but I don't want to be the alpha. But that alpha doesn't know what they're doing, but I think I could. So they have this fascinating like push-pull with a leader above them. They need it. They don't want to supersede it, but they're kind of there to pot shot and take little chunks out and try to figure out where are you really. And so that's the six. Brilliant problem solvers. Wizards with problem solving. They have a sixth sense. They can see around corners. For the longest time, I did not like sixes. They just irritated me. And because they were so negative all the time. And I remember one time, this happened times, there was this one six. I was buying my house here in Phoenix and he was living in Austin. And he was like, show me the house. And I showed him a picture of the house. He's like, oh, there's a cliff behind you. Terrible idea. You should never do that. That's awful. All kinds of things are going to happen. I'm like, nah, whatever. This house been here for 20 years, 30 years. It's going to be fine. I'm not worried about it. Within like 3 years, we had multiple mudslides. We had huge rocks breaking holes in windows. And I was like, oh, that guy was right. Like, I thought he was just being afraid, but he turned out to be right. Sevens of the butterfly. These magical creatures. I don't care who you are. If a butterfly flies in right now, you're not like, ah, butterfly. No, you're like, butterfly. This is so exciting. They're magical, wonderful, light and shiny creatures. Do not ever confuse a butterfly with a kite. For the seven, no strings attached ever. I am free. You need to let me fly free. I will bring you some magic when I feel like it. And then I'm out. I got more fun, cool things to go do. And then to really balance that out, they're also like the orangutan. They like swing from tree to tree to tree to tree. They have a very hard time being present in anything they're doing. And they're always positively scenario planning the best case scenario. Everything is awesome. That's their theme song. Everything is awesome. That's the seventh theme song. And they're basically like, okay, I want to learn jujitsu. And they start learning jujitsu. And while they're practicing jujitsu, they're like, you know, it'd be really cool. A trip to Italy. I need to plan a trip to Italy. And they're on their phone while they're trying to, you know, roll around, plan their next trip to Italy. And when they're in Italy, they're like, when I get back, for sure, I'm taking violin lessons. Where can I get the best violin? And they're just not, they're just bouncing. So it's that stone that skips across the pond and is a mile wide and an inch deep. Very narcissistic, very self-focused. They want to get what they want first. And super fun, really enjoyable to be around. They're just the life of every party. You want a seven start in every party. And they just live life freely. So remember at the beginning, I said, if a one says, I'm super overworked, I can't handle this, believe them. If a seven says, I'm super overworked, I can't handle this, you say, that's adorable. Because the seven is like, this is boring. I don't like doing this. Right. So imagine a seven and a one in a budget meeting. How well would that go? Right. It's like, all right, the one, sit down. We're going to sit through this. We're going to get through this in 3 short hours. Let's just start at line number one. And the seven's like, oh my gosh, will you guys call me later when this is done? I'm going to go get coffee. The eight. Oh, before we get to eight, any comments or questions? Oh dear. I just went through all of these comments or questions. Is this ringing bells? Are you seeing these types, either in yourself or in people you know?
Yeah, it's just really great. This is really amazing and fun.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah. Sorry. I have this build and I accidentally went all the way backwards. I don't know why I did that. Anybody else? Any other comments or questions while I slowly build my slides back?
Quick question, Shane, and this is probably outing one of my things, but I want to know about, because I saw myself in a couple of these. And so I think you're probably going to already talk about this soon, but, you know, qualities or aspects or wings, you know, you have an aspect of one, but then you have an aspect of another. You know, I saw myself really heavy on the 1, 2, 3, 4 side, but
yep,
that's where it was like, I can see aspects of this, but that could also be the conditioning that I grew up in, or like how I had to adapt. But is that really me, or is that the extra layer of diamond that I'm working on, or things like that? So question and also comment on that.
Great question. And yes, we'll definitely talk about that. Okay, cool. So the eight is the rhinoceros. So a rhinoceros has like 4-inch thick plated skin and a giant horn on its front. And I want you to imagine if a rhinoceros walked in a room and there was a wine glass and it stepped on it and it shattered, would the rhino even notice that there was a wine glass? Probably not. So they're really, they have this really thick, hard exterior. Their primary aim in life is to gore things. And they have a soft, gooey center. That's what they're really protecting. They're very terrified of rejection. So they tend to pre-reject others and they tend to roll over people pretty easily. Very, very powerful creatures. Eights have a disproportionate amount of power and bandwidth in the world. It's like they're plugged into a nuclear power plant. If you have some big, heavy, thick wall you need to break through, that's an eight's job. They live with a belief that pretty much everything's broken and they're the only ones that can fix it. The motto of the eight in the world is, I have a wonderful plan for your life. They really have a wonderful plan for your life at every turn. They know what right answer you should be living and they'll tell you about it. Now, to balance out that rhinoceros, they're also more of a bull. You know, you can really feel the difference between these two creatures. Not really, right? Okay, so there's a redundancy here, kind of like the one. There's a little bit of a doubling down. The other thing about the eight is that if you flash a little bit of red at it, it'll get mad and charge. So eights tend to want to charge and they get angry easily. And so eights live with a low-grade rage through most of their life. They wake up in the morning with anger and they just have to attach it to something or someone and then burn it off. A great way to live as an eight is to work out really, really, really hard for an hour in the morning so that you normalize your anger. Okay, so eight should be sufficiently offended by everything I said there. I feel like it's a roast. It's not actually, it's nothing kind I'm saying here to anybody. Okay, last is the nine. The nine, energetically, this is the sloth. Now, this should not be confused as being lazy. Think more in terms of energy. I've had nines that are very high achieving leaders, CEOs of big companies that are nines. And what makes a nine is if you've ever seen a sloth move, they move really slow and measured. So there's this very laid back attitude. And so this really funny thing happens with nines. You'd be talking to a nine, I'll be coaching him and I'll say, hey, how you doing? And he'll be like, oh, I'm like super stressed. I've got like a whole lot of stuff I got to get done. I've got $40 million of my personal guarantees that might come through. So yeah, pretty worked up right now. And I'll be like, oh my gosh, you should tell your face because you look totally relaxed, like nothing is bothering you. And that is very typical of nines. Nines are also the whale. The whale, if you've ever seen a whale in the wild, they're this magical, gentle creature that never would hurt a fly. If you look in their eyes, they're kind of almost spiritual, just deep kindness with nines. When you meet a nine, there's just an affable warmth and kindness. It also means that they're not going to confront anybody or anything. And so the old joke is, if you've got a nine as a boss, you want to be the last person in the room, to leave that boss, because that's the idea that we'll take. And here's why, because nines want their inner life to be like a pond with no waves in it. They want to be able to see their own reflection. So if you drop a little pebble in, you've disrupted the waves. So what they do is they merge with you energetically. They don't even know they're doing it. So I'd had a nine CEO and a six lieutenant and a seven lieutenant. The six was the operator. The seven was the chief marketing officer. The nine would have a meeting with the six. And the six would be like, oh my gosh, we have so many issues going on. We've got this. This isn't going to work. I think that's a bad idea. We're in real trouble. We're going to lose millions of dollars this month. And the CEO's going, oh yeah, yeah. So if the six is going like this, the CEO is just matching because it feels more comfortable for the nine. It's like, okay, good. I'm in harmony with whatever this energy is. Even if it's not my energy, I don't care. I'm just going to join it. So like, yeah, that sounds terrible. All those things are awful. That's a really bad thing. You're right. We should probably do that. That guy leaves, the seven walks in his office. He's like, oh my gosh, we're going to make millions of dollars. You have no idea how exciting this is. We've got this incredible marketing plan. We've got all these new partnerships. It's just going to be crazy and epic and amazing. And the CEO's going, yeah, this amazing, epic, incredible, cool. Yep, for sure. It's awesome. And then as soon as the seven leaves, the nine kind of goes, amazing. That's super cool. That's interesting. That's for sure. That's something to think about. And what was I excited about again? I can't remember. And then they come back to their own center. And so it's deeply frustrating if you don't have that sense of like, where do you stand? It's like nailing Jell-O to the wall. So that is the 9. All right. Comments or questions? Are you seeing yourself in any of these? Are you seeing people in your life? Is anybody super offended and wondering why I didn't say something nice about a type? I can say nice things. I really do have that ability.
I think these are fantastic. One question I do have, when is a typical age where somebody can take one of these tests and it would be accurate? Because when you're talking about 9, I am picturing my oldest son to a T.
He's 18.
He's 18.
Yeah, you know, he can do it. There's a great book called Enneagram for Parenting, and I think there's another book that's like Enneagram for Parenting Made Easy. I'd have to look them up and share them with you. I honestly tend to want to be really careful not to overtype too early with kids. I like to let them grow. And even if you're totally right, I think it's actually not helpful for them to be locked into a view of themselves too early. And so, you know, 18's pretty good age where you can probably start it. And if he's got interest, then yeah, go for it. But like, I know what my daughters are, one's 17, one's 14, and I'm really careful not to talk about it. Like sometimes I'll allude to something and they kind of know something about it, but I very deliberately let them just live their life and not have to think too much about it.
Shane, is it the Enneagram of parenting with the, I don't know if you can see, no, you can't. It's like the yellow brain with all of the things around it.
I think so. Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
So that can be useful, but again, I haven't read that book, but I've heard good things. I just personally recommend you not overtype your kids. That's the only thing. So you can type them privately, but you don't type them for them. And this, by the way, brings me back to the other rule of the Enneagram, which is you don't ever type somebody else. And what I mean by you don't ever type somebody else is I mean, you will privately be typing people all the time. You will be constantly, now that you see this world, you'll be like, oh my gosh, I think they're that, or that's that, or this is that. But what we mean by that is we don't literally say to someone like in a meeting, hey, Chris, stop being such a one. You're being way too pigheaded. That's a no-go. What I do encourage people to do is to type yourself in front of others. That's a powerful way. So I've taken this tool into executive senior teams that have the most dysfunction I've ever found. All I've done is teach them the Enneagram and teach them the rules for how to use it. And nearly all the dysfunction vanished, because all of the irritation and frustration were locked up in typologies, the habits of types. And when you do it this way and you have a sense of humor about it and you have compassion and you realize that everybody's got their own stuff, it lightens the mood quite a bit. So that's that. All right, let me keep running through some things here. The shape, I'm going to talk about the shape now. This is the interior. Hold on a minute. Maybe I'm not talking about the shape, am I? No, I'm going to talk about the shapes here. So let's do this really quick. This is just another way of thinking about Enneagram types to keep getting yourself more clear. There's seeking and avoiding, right? So what is it that my type searches for? And what is it that I'm avoiding? And this is another way for you to kind of look at yourself and go, you know, you're going to resonate with some of these more than others. It's not like there's one you're going to resonate with, but ones are looking for perfection and they want to avoid making mistakes or doing it wrong. Twos want to be appreciated and needed. They want to avoid feeling useless. Threes want respect and admiration. They want to avoid failure like the plague. Fours want to express deep feelings. They want to avoid any kind of rejection or feelings of unworthiness. Fives, knowledge and wisdom, but they want to avoid intrusions by others. Fives are really good at kind of like, if they walk into a room, they'd love to go stand behind a chair to talk to you, like a little bit of boundaries. They like to keep it, you know, some space. Six, looking for meaning, certainty, trust, and they want to avoid threat and danger. Seven, stimulation and pleasure. They want to avoid pain and discomfort. Eights want control and justice. They want to avoid feeling vulnerable and weak. Nines are looking for harmony and comfort. They want to avoid conflict and ill will. So hopefully that captures some of that. Let's talk about the connections and the wings. So the shape that you see in the middle are really just two different shapes. One is a triangle and the other is a winged hexad shape, which I'll talk about in a minute. These are called the primary types. The triangle connects the three primary types. 9, 6, and 3 are the primary types. Now I'm going to test your memory of this training. Do you remember at the beginning, I talked about the three centers of intelligence. Where did they map to relative to this triangle? You're going to hurt one of my feelings if you don't know the answer. And
I know the 5, 6, and 7 maybe were to the head.
Good. So that's the head type. So where does the 6 live relative to the head types?
Right in the middle.
Right in the middle. How about the 9? Right in the middle of the?
Gut. Body.
Got 3 right in the middle of the?
Heart.
Heart.
Great. So what that means is when you come into this world, whatever type you are, you have access to the types on either side of you and the types that connect the lines. So imagine yourself as a plane. You have a fuselage, you have 2 wings, and you have 2 landing gear. That is a perfect balance. If you lose a wing or you lose one of your landing gears, you're going to fly in circles or you're not going to land well, right? So the whole thing that's fascinating about the Enneagram is that all of us tend to have really good access to one of our wings and not the other, and usually one of our landing gear and not the other. So we tend to have, if you imagine a sports team, you have five players that are all-star players, but you keep putting the same 3 players in every single play, no matter what, and you bench the other 2. Now, why am I telling you this? Because the primary types, wings, are actually still within the same center of intelligence. So when I told you at the beginning that the primary center of intelligence is the distortion you have, it means that primary types have a double distortion. They have a double pathology. They have a harder time moving out of their habits and patterns. The secondary types, which are comprised of this shape, are a little more mobile because the 1, for example, has one of its wings in the heart and one of its wings in the body. And so it's diluted some of the pathology. So it has a little bit more ability to move. Okay. So that's the 9, the 3, and the 6 tend to be a little more entrenched in their patterns. And the others tend to be a little bit more mobile in how they can navigate those patterns. And what's really fun and interesting is you can see how the connections and the wings build in a corrective to the pattern of the primary type. Look, for example, at a 3. What do we remember about a 4 and a 3? Well, a 3 is highly disconnected with their own sense of self and heart and identity. They're busy trying to become what everybody wants. The 4 is overly immersed in their own emotional heart space and doesn't want to be like anybody else. So you can see how the 2 of them together create a built-in corrective. And so look at the 2 and the 8. What do we know about a 2? They are fundamentally what? Masculine or feminine? Now, I don't mean male, female. I mean energetically. Which are they? What's a 2? More feminine or more masculine?
2, more feminine.
More feminine, right? The helper, the giver, the nurturer. What's the 8? More masculine or feminine?
Masculine.
Yeah. Super masculine, right? Doesn't matter whether you're a man or woman. Doesn't matter. The point is that these 2 types provide healing and balance, and you can see they're connected. What about the 8 and the 5? If the 5 is ready, aim, 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 and then aim again, the 8 is ready, fire, aim. And you can see that kind of like high-powered energy. When a 5 accesses that high-powered energy 8, that's how they begin to become whole and healed. So is that starting to make sense? Can you see how each type has a little bit of that? So let's talk about me for just a minute, because I love talking about me, and I know you all love talking about me. So, because I'm a 3. I don't know if you knew that, but I'm a 3 on the Enneagram. And I had, growing up, a very strong 2 wing, and I had very strong connection to the 9. I had absolutely buried and benched the 6 and the 4. the two types I had no interest in interacting with, didn't like them, didn't validate them. They were just irritating to me. The reason they were irritating to me is because they formed my shadow. The shadow is the part of us that we disown, dislike, and ignore in ourselves or repress, and we project that dislike onto others. So once you learn to integrate that part of yourself in, not only do you heal and balance your own personality structure, you also stop hating other people so much. So what happened was, when I was a three as a pastor of a small church, my two wing was super active because I was there to be helpful and a counselor and present with everybody. When I went to the really big stage of 6,000 to 8,000 people and thousands of people online, which was awesome for the three in me who liked to name drop how big and important I was. But I was really protected from the people. Like, I had a green room and I had handlers and security, and it was crazy, it was weird. But what happened was, I was hired to get on a big stage to create a really compelling experience for people every single week. And so my four started getting active. I wanted to be unique and different and not like other pastors. And I wanted to have a special kind of sermon that would, you didn't get me. I'm so unique. And so it was really interesting how that started activating in me. The six, I had a long-term relationship with a woman who was a six. All of the things that bothered me about her were the fact that she was a six. And I had to learn over time that if I could integrate that part of me, she would bother me a whole lot less. And that's exactly what happened. As I experimented with what would it be like to be suspicious of someone's motives? You know, the nine is super trusting, trust everybody. Six doesn't trust a soul. So I was always like, why do you not trust anybody? Why is everybody out to get you? Why is that? And I started to realize, like, actually, sometimes people can't be trusted and I need to integrate that. And so that's how that starts to work. All right. So those are the connections and the wings. Comments or questions about any of this? Awesome. All right. So what I'm going to do, because we don't have much time left, I'm going to stop sharing. And I'm going to open it up for comments and questions. This week, I did mostly teaching. I don't usually do that. Usually it's 20 minutes of some kind of framing, and then we do coaching for those of you that are new and just joining us. Anything you guys want to talk about, comments or questions? I know, Peter, I maybe didn't answer your question, but I'm happy to talk about that if you want, now that we've got the basic stuff outlined.
Yeah. I'm fascinated about the relationship between a one, like the three and the nine and the six, that primary triangle, but then also the sub triangles. I'm trying to figure that out. And yes. So is it theoretically possible for a three to be very heavily a two and a four, but also have aspects of one? Or like, I'm curious about some of that.
Yeah, great question. So this is true for everybody now. There are all kinds of look-alike types on the Enneagram. And I'm going to show you an example of how something could be a look-alike type, but are not the same. One is, you have three clusters that are unrelated to the shapes. You have assertive types, which are the three, seven, and the eight. That means they move out into the world more assertively. You have compliant types, one, six, and two, which means they tend to be more like, how do I do this the right way? How do I conform to the social norm or to the what the proper thing is, or that's compliant. And then you have withdrawn types, nine, four, and five. They tend to withdraw from the world and observe, right? So all three of us have all three movements, but each type tends to dominate one or the other. You also have harmonics. So I'll just show those really quickly. The seven, nine, and two, these are the positive outlook group types. What that means is, when they don't get what they want, their outlook is to go positive. So the very next thing here you have is, seven is, there may be a problem, but I'm fine. Nine is, what problem? There's no problem. Two is, you have the problem. I'm here to help. So it's all positive, right? So they can look alike because they're so positive. The one, three, and fives are harmonic. That's the competency group. When you don't get what you want, you got to do a better job. You got to work a little harder, think a little more, do the thing a little righter, faster. There's a right way to do this if we just follow the directions. You guys are covering my screen. There's an efficient solution. We just need to get to work. There are a number of hidden issues for me to think about. That's the five, right? And then the last harmonic is the reactive group. This is the 4, 6, and 8. When they don't get what they want, they feel it's their right to express their emotions about that for everybody around them. 4 is going to be like, I really feel hurt and I need to express myself. 6 is like, no one sees what I can see and I got to let off some steam about it. And 8 is like, I'm just angry about this and you're going to hear about it. And so that all of that is meant to show you that you have these different lookalikes. So if you go back to this and you just ask yourself, okay, well, yeah, I see parts of me here and parts of me there and all that stuff. The most telling sign of your type is not your behavior or your preferences. So a 3 can act a lot like a 1 or a lot like an 8, because a 3 is super efficient and effective. They're both doers. They get a whole lot done. They're ambitious. They want to achieve a lot. So that 1, 8, 3 is very similar in a lot of ways. The big difference is this. The 3 lives its life deeply aware of what other people think of them. And they're constantly making micro adjustments without even knowing it, to facilitate people liking them more. Their underlying emotion is shame. They feel not worth very much. And so they are achieving and succeeding and getting better cars and bigger homes and a bigger net worth in order to compensate for that shame. The 1 may be very hardworking and effective and efficient and doing all kinds of things. They are not spending a lot of time thinking about what other people think of them. They're thinking about, what is the right way to be and what's the wrong way to be? And how do I make sure that I'm doing the right way? And that's why what's really funny about 3s is if you push on a 3, they can be quite adaptable. They're like, oh, you don't want to go that way? We could try this way. Oh, we could try that. Or there's this option too, or I could be this. You push on a 1, they're like, why are you pushing? It's like throwing a stone at a train. Like, I'm going this way because I've already determined it's the right way. And so they don't worry that everybody thinks they're an a-hole. They're like, not my problem. This is the right way. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm doing it right. So I'm going to keep going. And so they're also far less likely to be driven by efficiency. 3s, their whole life gets reduced to a series of to-do lists. Like, I got to get this done, got to get this done, got to get more done, got to get packed more in and more time to get it all done. Whereas the 1 is like, if it takes me all day, it'll take me all day, but I'm going to get it done right. And we're going to keep doing it right until it's done right. And so they are less driven by efficiency. The 8, also hard charging, driven, does all these things. Their underlying thing is ultimately they're very interested in power and quite suspicious of other people taking advantage of them. So they're interested in protecting and creating power centers. And so they will assert things. They also see the world as broken and they're the only ones that can fix it. So they just get in there and they charge ahead and fix it. 8s have no concern for what other people think of them on the surface. And then really deep down, they're very, very afraid of people rejecting them. And so they're much more emotionally present. They feel their emotions much more intensely. That's the other thing you can look at, is the relationship to emotions. 3s have a tendency to suspend and live above their emotions. They don't even know they're happening half the time. 1s feel their emotions, but they tend to want to keep them under wraps. They're like, yep, I feel the anger. I'm going to make it appropriate. Yep, I feel the fear. I'm going to talk about that. They're present. 8s are like, yeah, I'm angry. I'm pissed off. You're going to hear about it. Yeah, I'm this. And so that's how another way you can see and feel the difference is, what's that underlying emotion? Is it shame? Is it anger? Is it fear? Those are, by the way, the 3 underlying emotions of each subtype. 2, 3, and 4 are all shame types. 5, 6, and 7, those are all fear types. And 8, 9, and 1 are all anger types. And you might think that's strange. You're like, 9, I'm not. And 9s aren't angry at all. 9s have a lot of anger. They just live above it. They're not aware of it. They're totally suspended from their anger. All right. So I'm not sure if that was getting an answer to your question, Peter, but I was just trying to continue to sketch out things for people.
That was very helpful.
Love it.
Other comments or questions about any of this?
How's the best way to go about, and we touched on this last time, my boss is probably an 8. Not probably, he's like, damn, He's an eight. He's the bull in the china shop. But he's, you know, big heart, and he is susceptible to, you know, feeling his, gets his feelings hurt. I'm the five, as you outed me as such. Where would you recommend we go to figure out how to make those types work together? And my wife's a two. We joke, she's the golden retriever. She just wants to do everything for everybody, make everybody happy at all times. So there's got to be resources that recommend, okay, if you're this and you're trying to work with somebody who's that, here's some things to consider.
You teed it up beautifully. Let me share my screen here and show you where to go to get those resources.
Glad I could help.
Yeah. you're like a plant. Planted you. Okay. So you go to bonuses under the Next Level Leader program. Those of you who have login, if you don't have a login, sometimes that there's glitches, let me know, email me, text me, and we'll get you logged in. You go to the Enneagram bonus. You can watch a version of what I just did. This is where you have access to that. So this whole dog and pony show I just did is available here. there's some things that I talk about that are similar. Some go deeper. And then down here at the end, you have the Enneagram Type Summary Guide. And I'm going to download that so you can see it. So this is just 9 pages. I recommend you print it out, have it on your desk. And all you're going to get is super simple, like description, workplace behaviors, workplace advice, areas of strength, areas of development, how to get along with me, and awareness questions. So at the heart of the Enneagram is transformation happens through awareness. By the way, we're at time, but I'm going to keep going. So if you guys want to stick around, great. If you need to go, go. But there's some more stuff here that I think is going to be useful. So the reason this is so helpful is if your boss is an eight, you can go down to the eight and just remind yourself who they are. And then you can say, how to get along with me. Be confident, strong, and direct. Don't gossip about me or betray my trust. Acknowledge the contributions, but don't flatter me. I speak in an assertive way. Don't automatically assume it's personal attack. When I scream, curse, stomp around, try to remember it's the way I am. Eights hate this one, but I do it playfully. Mm-hmm. and so this is supposed to help you know how to get along with an eight. You might also look at your type and go, okay, what do I need to do as a five? Well, here's some workplace advice for a five. Take risks and speak up, even if you fear appearing foolish. Emulate someone others you know who aren't afraid to put their foot in their mouth. Don't avoid conflict. Take a stand. Learn to act even when you don't have all the information that you would make you feel comfortable, right? So you can feel in which the way in which what I'm suggesting here goes against some of your fundamental operating. Now, this is not a perfect document, right? Some of this you might be like, yeah, it's not really my thing. That's okay. We're just trying to give you like a push on the right direction. The other thing I want you to all to notice is at the bottom of these are awareness questions. Okay. And if you go to, let's say the three, this is my type. The awareness questions are designed to bring light in a dark room. So at the heart of the Enneagram is that awareness is the cause of transformation. It is an effortless transformation. That means that if you are in a dark room and it's pitch black and you want to get across that room and you don't have light, then you need very specific instructions for how to get across that room. And somebody's got to tell you how to do that. You're going to take one step here and you're going to go take a left. And you're going to do this, et cetera. If you turn the light on, you will navigate that room with ease, with no trouble. Light or awareness equals choice. Once you have choice, you have freedom. When you can't see, you are imprisoned or unconscious. When you are so identified with your pathology that you can't even see that it exists, you are governed by it. Habitual repeating patterns that never change. But if you can create even this much space, just an inch, you have the ability to now choose or not choose that pattern. So that is the power of awareness. So these questions are literally just, if you ask them without even answering them, you're doing work on your subconscious mind. If you tape these questions up next to your desk and periodically just notice them, you're actually doing transformational work. There are lots of other questions you could ask. I just picked three. What feelings have occurred to me since I last stopped to check? I've never checked. I don't have any feelings. Next question. How have I deceived myself and others? I don't even like that question. Next question. When was I clear about my feelings, even when others might not have respected them? Never. Okay, so that might be my answer that day, right? The next day, I might answer it again and go, you know, last week I did a pretty good job. I was pretty clear that I didn't like how something went, and I told somebody about it, and I was afraid they weren't going to respect me, and sure enough, they didn't respect me. What feelings have occurred to me? You know, I've been stressed and overwhelmed. Threes are like all about stress and frustration and overwhelm. They're like sadness. No, I don't know what you're talking about. So like, you know, you're digging into something useful when they can start to feel sadness. They're like, I was feeling sad today. Oh, that's scary. Okay. So does that help a little bit? You know where to find this? And, this is a little shortcut for how to talk to your boss or talk to your coworkers or.
Amazing.
Awesome.
So
other comments or questions?
At the beginning of the video, I wasn't on. Did you give the test to everybody then?
Yeah. So if you go into the chat, you can take the test. Let's see here. Where are we? Yeah. Up at the top, the very first link is the test I recommend. It's a $30 test. You can get free ones. You can try free ones, but this one I think is the best methodology. So that's where we are.
You kind of pick the one you want to be or hope that you are. And then the one that you are is the one you're like, oh, that's the one I didn't want to be.
Yes. That is exactly how it works. When I read my type, there's only two exceptions, eights and sevens. They love their type. When they find it, they're like, yeah, I got the best type. Yeah, of course. But every other type that I know, when they find their type, they're like, I just don't want to be that type. If there's any way I could not be that type, that would be ideal. It's usually the type that you are.
I'm a three.
I knew I was a five.
You knew you were a five. Davey, you're a three?
I'm a three.
Yeah.
So when it asked me that question, what feelings have occurred to me since I last stopped and checked? I'm like,
That's hilarious.
I haven't stopped and checked. I couldn't tell you, but it's always stress and frustration and to-do list. And yeah.
Yes. Your whole life gets reduced to nothing but a to-do list. Mm-hmm. Threes have a way of extracting all the joy from life if they can.
Thank you.
To get stuff done.
my kids and my husband will be like, yep, that's mom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the really important thing to notice about the three, when I say deceptive, you know, how have I deceived myself? That can sound really harsh. It really isn't about lying. Everybody on the Enneagram lies. It's not like threes are the liars and everybody else are truth tellers. It's really that the three has a natural ability. If I say to you, hey, Davia, are you happy with your work? You'll go, yeah, I'm doing great. Love my job. It's awesome. I'm super happy. And you won't actually pause to go, I hate my job. I am overwhelmed and I don't want to come to work anymore. And I really hate it. Like that's how threes deceive themselves. They just suspend, they sever the connection to the rest of their body and they live up here like a newscaster, kind of like a floating head. And so when a three gets connected to their heart, it just feels pointless. They're like, this is so inefficient to have these annoying emotional things going on. Like they're just getting in the way of like getting stuff done. And so what can happen then?
Why are you crying? What is that going to do? Why are you crying?
Exactly. Yeah. What's the point of crying? When I first did therapy and the therapist was like, yeah, that's probably something you should grieve. I'm like, why? Why would I grieve that? That's a waste of time. I don't get the point of tears. And I learned over the process of doing the work and connecting is that with a three, their superpower is actually their heart. So when a three connects to their heart, they become far more effective, respected, capable than when they're up in their head trying to manage a chess match. And they become less exhausted and they become genuinely happy. And they also become less afraid of what people think of them. And they become less afraid of letting people down and all those things that threes tend to run from. And failure is now a form of feedback rather than a terrible monster that chases them. It's just another piece of information. But it all comes from descending down into the heart and feeling again and feeling really inefficient things that are seemingly pointless, but are actually full of wisdom.
Shane, would you put that test in the chat again? Because I was in another meeting and I hopped in as quick as I could, so I didn't get that link.
I didn't either. It says on mine, access to file restricted by your account admin.
It's real quick. It's IEQ9.com. IEQ9.com.
I just dropped it in the chat again. If you want to see it there, you can.
Any of the ones just rejoice because they got it right.
What's
mine
that?
Blocked, but then it worked.
Shame. That, that was a bad joke. I said all. Of
I didn't
the
hear
ones,
it.
All of the ones immediately rejoiced because they got it right.
Yeah.
That's true. That's very true.
Awesome. Awesome. Other questions, comments, anything you guys need? I did so much talking today that I wanted to make sure we give you a little more time if you need anything. But otherwise, next week, it'll be a little lighter. I'm going to introduce you to the 5 leadership languages. So that's another typology, but it's something I created based on experience that I have doing this for 20 years. To create another kind of efficiency in how you relate to your people and your team. It'll be a lot less profound than the Enneagram, which is on purpose. It's meant to be lighter and simpler to digest and use.
Cool.
Awesome.
Okay. So next week I will be gone. Next 2 weeks I'll be gone.
Okay.
And so anyway. So yeah, I just wanted to let you know, but I know you have it recorded, so.
You will be missed.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's my last one or not, or if I'll get one more right before I'm done. But
I'm pretty sure it's not because I haven't gotten notification. I get notification when you have 2 weeks left.
Okay.
And I haven't been notified. And if those are for some reason your last 2 weeks, just let me know. Like if you stop getting the reminders and I'll tag on a week or two. So.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much. Okay.
Shane, is the recorded version of this sent out afterwards?
Usually an email goes out and it just goes to let you know to go to the coaching tab. So I will, this is a little resource that maybe people don't know is there. But like you have access to almost all of the group coaching call recordings, audio and video for a long time. And there's just a ton of gold in there from our conversations that aren't in the modules. So if you are working out or you're walking or you're doing something and you can have it in the background, sometimes people find that useful just because certain people will ask questions that aren't being asked in the actual training modules.
I don't have that in my portal. I've got all modules, account, and sign out. That's it.
You don't have bonuses either?
Nope.
Well, that's a problem. I don't think I've ever. Let me make sure that you are in the right program. That's weird. That really shouldn't be that way. And some of you I know haven't even had a chance to sign in. Will you all let me know if you sign in and you don't have coaching or bonuses? Will you let me know? This is weird. What is all modules? I don't understand why that tab is even there. That seems redundant.
I've got is all modules and account and then sign out.
Okay. Steve, let me talk to Amy, my integrator, and I'll let her know that this is not appropriate.
I see that too. All models, account, and sign out.
That's what I have.
Yeah.
Well, you guys got a cheap program. I don't know what to tell you. I'll make sure you guys get the full access. There's no I don't even know why that happens. David, do you have the whole thing? Do you have everything? And Renee, you have everything? Okay, yeah. Good. Well, I like you guys better than these other three. It's personal. It's personal. All right. I'll hop off and make sure that I get that information right away over to my integrator. Well, this is wonderful. Thank you all so much. Really great to see you all. Look forward to next week. And we'll go deeper.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shane.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you all. Bye.